If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Words on a page. How can you use them to make readers feel emotion? We're going to find out in today's episode. Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. My name is Jed Hearn, and every episode I analyze a story to help you become a better writer. Today's episode is titled The Language of Dying by Sarah Pinborough. Creating Emotion. This episode is sponsored by my very own upcoming fantasy novella, Fires of the Dead. The blurb is as such. Wisp is a pyromancer, a magician who draws energy from fires to make his own flames. He's also a criminal, one job away from retirement, and it can't come bloody soon enough. Leading his misfit crew, Wisp ventures into a charred and barren forest to find a relic that could change the realm forever. But they aren't the only ones on the hunt, and the forest isn't as barren as it seems. A jaded gang leader longing for retirement, a bloodthirsty magician with a lust for power, a brutish fighter who's smarter than he looks, a young thief desperate to prove herself, a cowardly navigator with secrets that won't stay buried. Together, they must survive fights, fires, and folk tales that prove disturbingly real, if they don't kill each other first. Fires of the Dead is a dark fantasy novella with a unique magic system, and if you want a fast-paced fantasy read, you will really enjoy it. This is my debut novella, and I'm really excited to share it with you. It comes out on September 20th, and you'll be hearing a lot more from me about that book when the release date rolls around. But for now, you can go to jedhearn.com/Fires of the Dead to find out more about it and pre-order it if you are so inclined. So, The Language of Dying. That's what this episode is all about, because this was a short novella that I initially picked up because I thought it would be a really similar size to Fires of the Dead, actually. And I was really glad that I picked it up. It is a very moving, very emotional story about a woman who is caring for her dying father. And this is not an easy death. It is a slow, long, agonizing death. And throughout this period of several days of the father passing away, her family comes. There's lots of conflict there. There's lots of internal struggles. And what you really get is a story where there isn't a massive amount of stuff that really happens, but the emotional totality that's created by the author was just staggering, and it really had quite an impact on me. And because of that, I wanted to try to understand how it did it. How did it create such emotion in what was really a deceptively simple story? So today I'll be analyzing a couple of passages from The Language of Dying, passages that created an emotional reaction in me. Now, I don't know if it's possible for emotion to be present in every single page of a story, because that just intuitively would seem really exhausting, and the point is that you need to build to these high-impact emotions. So I think this approach of analyzing several key passages is pretty appropriate for this circumstance. So, passage number one. I'll read a short extract from the novel. Tonight, the music can't drown out the rage, and our mother shrieks her tantrum, all the words becoming one animal howl through the plaster of the ceiling. My heart is beating fast in my chest, discordant with the record and with the row. There are hot, wet tears on my cheeks, but I don't sob. I pull the covers further up over my head and wish I could remember a song to sing myself. Something that isn't jazz, that isn't wild, but my head is empty. After a while of listening to the pounding thump of blood pushing around my body, feeling my own hot breath beneath the blanket that threatens to choke me, I realize that the sounds from below have stopped. Only the jazz is playing cheerfully on, uncaring about its silent accompaniment. I pushed my clammy face out into the light and listen. There is nothing below the music. The carpet is rough beneath my feet as I go carefully out into the hallway. Paul and Penny are sitting silently on the top stair. They look at me with their matching wide brown eyes. I think Mum's gone, Paul says. So this extract is a flashback to when the main character's mother left their family, and I found this a very impactful scene. So what makes this work so well? Well, to help us better understand this, I'm going to reference The Emotional Craft of Fiction by Donald Mass, which is a writing advice book that I read recently and is super good for this kind of stuff. In The Emotional Craft of Fiction, Donald Mass says, quote, "To be effective, writing about emotions has to be artful, which is another way of saying surprising." End quote. One way to achieve this level of surprisingness is to ask, quote, "What is your protagonist seeing that others don't? Add one detail that only your protagonist would see, and see it in his own unique way." End quote. This passage from The Language of Dying is, for me, impactful because it's not generic. It's not a generic flashback of the mom leaving the family, as you may have seen just randomly montaged in a lot of movies. It's a highly specific story that creates this interesting link between the parents arguing and jazz. Jazz becomes this motif, which in the future reminds the narrator of this moment. So this is highly specific. You could probably think about similarly specific things in your life that trigger powerful memories of your past. Good or bad, our memories are often triggered by these small things. And so we see in this passage a key lesson. Specificity is the path to emotion. Specificity is the path to emotion. It's not enough to write about generically emotional things. A funeral, a child's birth, winning the lottery. These things are objectively emotional, but stories aren't objective. They're subjective. And to get that subjective emotional response from the reader, you, as the author, you have to make it personal. You have to show how this is for this character. Not for all the characters. Not for all characters. For this character. For this character. Okay, so let's move on to the second passage. And as I'm going through this, you might want to think to yourself before I give the quote-unquote answers what it is that makes this passage effective emotionally. There are more people in Tesco than I expect on a working day, and I lose myself in them as I drift up and down the aisles, filling my trolley with bacon and eggs and pineapple juice. I select a box of field mushrooms, and then stare into the aisle. The lights overhead are too bright. A tired mother adds a large bag of King Edwards she'd obviously forgotten into her already overfull trolley, while the little boy in the child seat kicks at his metal confinement, squealing, "I want! I want!" I can't make out what it is he wants, but I think maybe his mother will just give in and get it for him just to find a moment's peace. She is pretty, but looks exhausted, and I wonder if I've caught her at a bad moment, or whether she lies in bed at night and wonders how her life came to this. Behind them, an old man carefully pulls a plastic bag from the holder and selects 3 or 4 new potatoes. Just enough for one. He adds them to his sparsely filled basket and shuffles slowly towards the tomatoes. I can't tell if the shuffle is brought on by age or by sheer soul weariness. Behind me, I can still hear the cry of, "I want!" It seems that age is all around, brought to nothing under the glare of the too white light and inane music. My throat tightens in a way it hasn't for a long time, and my ears buzz. Somewhere underneath my heartbeat and dry mouth, I wonder if I might abandon the trolley and run back out into the cold night into the cold air of the car park. But then the moment passes. I relax my grip on the trolley and rub my fingers. They are cold. My heart steadies and I continue my shopping, but I focus hard on the shelves rather than people. When the old man passes me again, I squeeze my eyes shut so tight that I think I can hear the pummeling of black hooves somewhere in the distance, but the panic doesn't grip me again. And I open my eyes and sigh out a long, shaky breath. I add the ketchup I'm staring at to my trolley. Yep, you heard it right. Who knew that grocery shopping could be so insanely emotional? Tesco's is a British grocery place. So what makes this work so well? Again, it's highly specific. The character's processing of the world around her is unique to her. No one else in this story, and probably no one else in any other story, would focus on the details she chose to focus on. So next, this key idea. Emotion is about internal stakes. It does not matter how many random lives are in jeopardy. Unless readers care about one of them, they won't bite their nails, or grip the book tight enough to widen their knuckles, or stay up until late to find out what happens. But when they care, when they invest in a character's journey, that's when the magic happens. And this reflects another key idea of Donald Mass, who, in The Emotional Craft of Fiction, suggests that there are multiple ways to convey emotion. He kind of defines this in three key ways. The first is outer. So this is where you are showing action to suggest emotion. If a character is punching another character, they're probably angry. Number two, inner. The character tells us in a surprising and satisfying way about their emotions. So this is the method used by this extract that I just read, and this is where a character is narrating to us as the reader. And the idea is through this narration, hopefully you can convey the emotional experience they're going through. And this doesn't mean, it probably definitely shouldn't mean, that the character says, oh, I'm really sad, oh, I'm really angry, but rather, think about that idea of show versus tell, right? You want the narration, you want their voice, you want the things that they're focusing on to convey the emotion, as done beautifully in this extract. And then the third way that Donald Mass suggests you can convey emotion is what he defines as other, which is the emotional totality of the story as a whole. Now, outer and inner emotion, those first two ways to convey emotion, seem pretty straightforward. But what about that third category, this idea of other? Well, whenever people, to me, start describing macro big picture stuff, it's normally a gateway for me to start thinking about theme. So I'm a big advocate of theme, as you would well know if you've listened to previous podcast episodes. And my favorite definition of it comes from Story by Robert McKee. Robert McKee defines theme as the controlling idea phrased as a sentence that defines a story. In The Language of Dying, I consider the theme to be this. Dying is a slow, ugly process that can only be dealt with intrinsically, without outside assistance. And this theme kind of influences every aspect of the story, from the sweep of the plot as a whole, to the way that things are described in a particular scene, and how characters progress in their arcs, and everything in between. So, how true is this? Let's actually look at the book and see if this is relevant or if I'm just making stuff up. So, an interesting aspect of the story is how it's told in this sort of second-person style, with the narrator often referring to a you. For example, quote, I listen to the pauses between your breaths, and although I know they will get much longer before the everlasting pause takes over, I still find my heart hitching slightly in the gaps. End quote. That's not dialogue. That's narration. The you is the narrator's dying father. She's basically addressing this story to her dying father. And this reflects the theme really well by showing the all-consuming power of death. The main character's narration is literally revolving around her dying father. You can't get any more thematic appropriateness than that, right? On the story's last page, however, we see a transformation. And I'm not just going to tell you that, but I'm going to show you that by reading it out loud. After a second, I turn and run. I can't be late. I can't be late this time. Not this last time. This last chance. I pound down the stairs, my legs heavy and solid. My feet slip on the kitchen floor, but I stay upright. I can hear sobs in my chest, but they don't slow me down as I tear out of the back door and down the path to the gate. I don't look at the swings. The night air is cold, and my lungs burn as I suck it in, deep down inside. No chain snoking for me. My legs desperate to reach it before it disappears. It always disappears. But not this time. Please not this time. I turn into the road, my limbs aching and clothes sticking to me. My hair is slick to my face. I have nothing to fear. The creature is waiting for me. It's always been waiting for me. I stand before it and wail as it roars and rears up, shaking the ground beneath us as it lands, and then I grab for it, my hands entwined in that rough mane, and I pull myself up, burying my face in its hot, sweaty neck. It smells exactly as I imagined it would. As it turns to the field, I am 10 and 25 and 40 next birthday. I am everything I will ever be and ever was, and I am alive. The blackness of the field and the night stretch out before us as the beast and I leap the fence. I laugh and my hair blows out behind me as we gallop. I feel my hooves pounding through the night as I rage onwards. Behind me, the lights from the house fade. I don't look back. Notice something? There's no you. So this passage occurs right after the main character's dying father has finally passed away. And now, there's no you. Now, there is only I. Now, the character has achieved self-determination and is finally moving on, coming to terms with what's happening. And whether or not you think that this creature, the character is, that's encountering here, is truly existing, because it's implied there's some kind of mythical Grim Reaper in unicorn form, essentially, which sounds weird, but it's actually pulled off quite well in the book. Whether or not you think that creature is real or not, you can see that the character is finally moving on and coming to terms with what's happening, either through the metaphor of this kind of unicorn Grim Reaper or through the actual presence of it. And bringing this back to this idea about that third, quote, other form of conveying emotion, this is how you do it. Through having a theme, through a character's arc, through the progress of the plot, you infuse your story with emotion on a macro scale. This is how you write meaningful fiction. This is how you write great stories. This is how you make readers feel. That's our episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, don't leave a review. Don't get me wrong, I love reviews, but it would mean so much more to me, and it would help me out in a different way if, instead of a review, you can go and tell a friend who would appreciate this podcast, a fellow writer who would appreciate this writing advice, or just someone who's interested in the craft of storytelling. Please go out and tell them, and I would really appreciate that. So thank you so much, I appreciate you, and I've loved having you along for the ride. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.